Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, July 28, 2014. More deadly fighting in Jonglei State over the weekend, just days before peace talks are set to resume.
We were attacked yesterday in a youth by the rebels of Riek Machar, and they were repulsed and with heavy casualties on the side of the rebels.
And UN officials warn of a food crisis in South Sudan if conditions do not turn around quickly.
I hope that we will not wait until a famine is declared in South Sudan before the world begins to come to grips with this problem.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Days before peace talks are set to resume in Addis Ababa after a break of more than a month, there are reports of fresh fighting in Jonglei State. South Sudan Army spokesperson Colonel Philip Aguirre says rebel forces have again violated the January 23rd cessation of hostilities agreement with a new attack on SPLA positions.
We were attacked yesterday in a youth by the rebels of Riek Machar, and they were repulsed. And with heavy casualties on the side of the rebels, the dead bodies that were counted in front of the SPLA trenches were 66 dead bodies from the side of the rebel. SPLA lost only 2 and 7 wounded.
Opposition military spokesperson Lo Rue Kwang denied that his side launched any attacks. He blames the SPLA for starting the latest fighting in Ayud, which was also the scene of deadly clashes last week.
We were not the ones attacking. They were the ones who were trying to come out of Ayud town, and we dropped them back to Ayud so that they don't get more territories from our forces.
Kwang also disputed the death toll given by Aguirre.
The figures he quoted are imaginary figures. We did not lose a number of fighters reaching to 66. The figures he gave you are exaggerated.
The new death toll given by Aguirre pushes the total number of fighters killed in more than a week of clashes in Ayud and the Upper Nile town of Nasser to more than 200. No civilian toll has been released by either side. The international community has been warning about upcoming severe food shortages in South Sudan for months now. With just weeks to go before the harvest, a food security expert says something needs to be done soon. Chris Hilbrunner is with the U.S. AID-funded Famine Early Warning Systems Network. He says food security will deteriorate rapidly by the end of the year unless things change. He says even though South Sudanese will begin harvesting their crops over the next few weeks, the amount of food is estimated to be too little, too late. For VOA News, Philip Aleu has more from Nimule.
Chris Hilbrunner says 4 million South Sudanese are critically food insecure. And he says that number is only to go increase next year if people are not able to produce their own food due to ongoing insecurity, displacement, and lack of humanitarian access, among other things. Hilbrunner says if people remain stuck in IDP camps and not plan food, the world could be looking at a food crisis in South Sudan by the end of this year.
We're currently in the peak of the lean season, and the situation is very dire in many parts of the conflict-affected states. We're expecting green harvests to start in the next 2 to 4 weeks, and then the main harvest in October. Those harvests are likely to provide some short-term relief, but we think that overall those harvests are going to be below average. And so if the conflict and the market issues and the constraints on humanitarian access aren't resolved, we are very concerned that 2015 could be worse than this year.
Hilbrunner says, based on their studies, nearly half of South Sudan's population is critically food insecure. He says food insecurity is measured in paces.
Currently, when we talk about the 4 million people, they are classified as either phase 3 crisis or phase 4 emergency. And this means that they don't have the ability to meet their basic food requirements So they're eating a reduced diet, a reduced number of meals, and that they're using very extreme coping strategies. So they are selling off assets like livestock, they're begging, they're doing other extreme things to access food.
Hill Branner says people are eating things like wild plants, such as water lilies, to stay alive. Hill Branner says people can no longer go to markets to buy their food because many of them shut down due to insecurity. He says continued fighting in parts of Jonglei, Unity and Upper Nile means that aid agencies are not reaching people who are trapped and most in need.
The assumption is that those people who left the conflict areas they're not doing well, but they're doing better than the people who still remain in Jonglei and Unity. An increasing number of the areas are being reached, but it has been difficult. And there are some areas that have still not received much assistance.
Hill Branner says the reason food insecurity is likely to get worse next year is that people from communities where they are normally food secure have told him that they are still too afraid to venture away from their homes and walk the field because of security concerns. For BOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Numale.
Two United Nations officials are calling on the international community to move quickly to prevent South Sudanese children from dying of malnutrition. They spoke to reporters late Friday in Juba after visiting Malakal, where tens of thousands of people are still sheltering in a UN camp. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu has this report from Juba.
UNICEF Executive Director Anthony Lek says up to 230,000 South Sudanese children are suffering from malnutrition and warns that up to 50,000 of them could die this year if action is not taken almost immediately. He describes the malnutrition situation in South Sudan as being catastrophic and says the government, rebels and NGOs must do everything they can to save the children.
I hope that we will not wait until a famine is declared in South Sudan before the world begins to come to grips with this problem. But I fear that if we do not do much more than we are doing, then South Sudan could free fall into famine before too long.
World Food Program Executive Director Etherine Cousin says the conflict is also limiting humanitarian workers from reaching thousands of children and families mostly in need. But she says that's not the only problem. Cousin says donors' slow response in releasing funds has been a major obstacle in their efforts to save South Sudanese children at risk of malnutrition. She says only about a third of the $43 million US dollars required by aid agencies to provide food, aid, vaccines, and other humanitarian services for more than 170,000 children have been released.
We must address the challenges now and not wait. We should not wait until we have enough children die. And we have an opportunity right now, if we continue to scale up, to meet the needs of those who not only are in the POC areas, but those who are in those pockets.
Cousin says food aid agencies also need money to provide clean water and medicine. Lek says aid workers are doing all they can to help people affected by the fighting. But he says only when South Sudan's leaders on both sides take responsibility and restore peace in the country can food shortages and malnutrition be stamped out.
We need a few things. First, we need peace. We need all the parties to come to their senses. We need the international community to keep putting sustained pressure on the parties to arrive at a peaceful solution. Over and over again in the camp, when we asked people, what do you need? That was the first thing they said. I expected them to say food. They said peace.
Lek and Cousin say an estimated 1 million children under the age of 5 in South Sudan will require treatment for acute malnutrition this year alone. According to the World Food Program, one in every three people in South Sudan faces dangerous levels of food security, with many of them not knowing when or how their next meal is coming. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
World Food Program spokesperson Chalice McDonough was with Arthurin Cousin and Anthony Lake when they visited Malakal. She says the once bustling state capital has been reduced to a ghost town by the conflict, and many Malakal residents have sought refuge at the UN base. McDonough told South Sudan in Focus web editor Karen Zeitvogel that conditions at the base are appalling.
I have never seen conditions like this in my life. There are about 17,000 people sheltered in the UN base. And the agencies that are working there, including WFP, many of the medical charities, UNICEF, IOM, all of the agencies are doing the best they can in extremely trying circumstances. But really, the whole place where people are staying has turned into a sea of mud. People are living on top of each other. You know, they're surrounded by mud when and it's the rainy season now. We got caught in a downpour that just turned the place into a giant, sort of raging river. You know, there's a great deal of danger from all sorts of health and sanitation hazards if those conditions for people aren't improved. The agencies are doing their best, but they also need additional resources and they need more space for the IDPs, but for our own staff. Our staff are also living in tents. In pretty similar circumstances and in what's really pretty appalling conditions in that camp.
What about the rest of Malakal? Is the town destroyed? Is there anything left?
It actually looks like, to me, like a city that has been abandoned for years. It's basically a ghost town, and you see streets that have just grown up with really tall grasses, shrubs, sorghum, all kinds. It's completely abandoned. It doesn't look like a city anymore. It's a ghost town. And there are a couple of areas of town where you still see some limited activity. But last year, or even 8 months ago, it was a thriving, bustling city with many thousands of people living there. And now there's basically only activity in a couple of limited places, and then this enormous population living in a lake of mud at the UN base.
But that's not the entire population of Malakal, I would presume. So where is everybody else?
Basically, I think the entire population of Malakal has either fled town or fled into the UN base. There are very, very few people left in the town. And a lot of people have... I had been to the area of Lao Shilik, which is just across the river, some ago. There were 40,000 people at that time who had fled from Malakal across the river into that area. Fighting has reached that area as well, so many of those people have fled elsewhere. But what we've seen is in many of the cities in South Sudan, outside in Bentiu, in Bor, in Malakal, these repeated waves of displacement as the cities have changed hands between the government forces and the opposition forces several times. And then as fighting, people have fled from the cities to rural areas or to smaller villages where they initially feel safe. And then the fighting moves to those villages and they have to flee again and sometimes again and again and again. There's practically nobody left in Malakal outside the UN base and a couple of other very sort of small, very limited population. It's one of the larger cities in South Sudan, and today it's practically abandoned.
That's Chalice McDonough, the senior regional spokesperson for the World Food Program in East Africa, speaking to South Sudan in Focus web editor Karen Zeitvogel from Nairobi. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the Warup food prices are skyrocketing and residents say they can't afford it. That story when we come back.
You don't want to miss VOA's South Sudan in Focus. You can hear us on one of our FM affiliate stations around the country or on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. In Juba, listen to South Sudan in Focus at 8 p.m. on 93.5. You can also find us on shortwave at 11995, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think your government structure works for your country? Why or why not?
No, because I feel the government structure right now only favors those in authority. look at people in the villages. They don't have that opportunity. They are not given the right to exercise this type of government structure.
Somehow, yes, actually 50%, because in other structures, people are not being productive. So there was need for restructuring a long time ago. And it's good that now the new government has put in measures whereby they are restructuring some of the government departments so that they should start becoming productive.
It works, but the leadership is faulty, as a matter of fact. That is one thing about it. So the structure is very, very okay, but our leadership is very, very, very nasty, very bad.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Residents of the capital of Warup State are complaining about steep increases in the prices of essential items, including food. Traders say they had to increase prices because of high transportation costs during the rainy season, not to mention what they say are the exorbitant taxes they are asked to pay to bring foods into the state. Santino Minute files this report from Kwajak.
Residents say it has become increasingly difficult to put food on the table in the last few weeks. They say the prices of most consumer goods, including staple foods like flour and sorghum, have doubled, and sometimes shoppers cannot even find them in the market. Resident Joka Owendo Okita works as a construction engineer in Kwajak.
I've come here looking for posho so that I could take it to the site for my people. God, the price of posho has really gone very high. For example, 10 kgs we used to buy 40 pounds, 45, but now it's gone up to 80 and you could not even see them in the market.
Okita says building materials also cost much more than they did about a month ago. He says he used to buy a 50-kilogram bag of cement for 120 South Sudanese pounds. These days, it costs 200 South Sudanese pounds, a 66% increase. Along Majok says she suspects traders are taking advantage of food shortages to hike prices and make huge profits before residents harvest their crops in a few weeks' time.
The price of a 4-kilogram measure of flour or sorghum has gone up from 12 to 16 South Sudanese pounds since June. The traders don't tell us why they have increased the price. Maybe they anticipate local crops will soon be ready for harvest, and they want to take all the money we have because they think we may not come back next month when we can buy our own crops.
Rong Akol, a retailer in Kwajak Main Market, says suppliers have increased the prices that the shy traders who are then passing on the fries eggs to consumers. Some of the fries increase are due to heavy rains that have made roads impassable.
Traders who usually bring sorghum from Uganda and Sudan are not coming these days. We get sorghum from Wau, where prices are very high. A bag of sorghum is 220 South Sudanese pounds, and transporting one bag from Wau to Kwajak is 20 South Sudanese pounds. That leaves us with a profit of only 10 South Sudanese pounds.
Longar Arup, deputy chairman of Warab State Chamber of Commerce, says traders who import goods from neighboring countries are having to pay very high transportation costs because of the poor states of the roads. To recover some of their expenses and make a small profit, the traders have had to hike the prices.
The prices have increased because the road to Juba is bad. Trucks take 3 months to reach Warab State from Uganda. Because of the delay, owners of trucks in Uganda have increased the fees they charge for transporting goods to 28 million Ugandan shillings.
That is almost $11,000 just for transporting basic goods. Arup says another thing that is driving up prices is the fact that traders in Kwajak buy their foreign currencies on the black market and fare well above the official exchange rates of around 3 South Sudanese pounds for $1. Foreign oil sellers will only accept dollars for the goods they sell in South Sudan, and on the black market, $1 costs between 4.5 and 5 South Sudanese pounds. According to Kwajok Town Council and Inspector agrees that impossible roads and black market dollar exchange rates has led to high prices, but he says officials are trying to find a way to fix the problem.
We are trying to investigate why people who bring sorghum and flour have stopped bringing them. We have formed a committee to find out why, and citizens will be given feedback in the shortest time possible.
Acting Governor Ken Tongaleo says the state has already taken one step towards bringing prices down. It has abolished a system of multiple taxation on traders who bring goods into the state. The state government is also working on ending black market currency trading by making it easier for local traders to get U.S. dollars through official channels.
We will toll every road blockers to stop collection money from all the traders, and then we will try also to see the way that we can give them a letter to the central bank so that they can at least accept it to change their money in a government rate. This way they can get the money and then they can immediately purchase and then they bring a good to the state.
Aleo says the state government will also refer routes to make it easier and cheaper to transport people, goods and services. For BOA News, I'm Santino Manuda Yuel in Kwajok, Warao State.
The World Health Organization reports viral hepatitis, which kills nearly 1.5 million people a year, could be eliminated. In marking World Hepatitis Day today, WHO says intensifying testing, prevention, and treatment efforts is key to tackling one of the world's most serious diseases. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Viral hepatitis is a largely neglected disease. This may seem strange, as this dangerous alphabet of infectious diseases, hepatitis A, B, C, D, and E, kills nearly as many people as does HIV/AIDS. Hepatitis B and C are most well known and justifiably feared because they cause chronic liver cirrhosis and liver cancer, very often leading to death. Hepatitis B is transmitted from an infected mother to her newborn baby, contact with infected blood, and unprotected sex. Injected drug users are most at risk from hepatitis C, as the disease is spread through the unsafe sharing of needles. Samuel So is a liver transplant surgeon at Stanford University in the United States. He says prevention is the best cure for liver cancer, as there is no effective chemotherapy to treat this disease, which is the second leading cause of cancer deaths after lung cancer. Despite this, he says viral hepatitis can be beaten, a view confirmed by health ministers who attended this year's World Health Assembly. He calls on countries to step up their activities now to eliminate these deadly diseases.
We have a very effective vaccine for 30 years to prevent the future burden of hepatitis B, so they don't develop chronic hepatitis and subsequent liver cirrhosis and liver cancer. And also, in addition, there are now very effective drugs to treat chronic hepatitis B, which is as simple as a pill a day. And you can prevent, like HIV, prevent disease progression to cirrhosis and liver cancer.
The World Health Organization reports more than 500 million people around the world are living with chronic viral hepatitis. About 2/3 of global deaths occur in Asia. The virus also is common in African countries. Most people with hepatitis do not know they are infected. Symptoms usually appear decades after serious liver disease already has set in. This is why WHO urges governments to invest in effective prevention measures. Nevertheless, head of WHO's Global Hepatitis Program, Stefan Victor, says people have reason to be optimistic as great advances are being made in new treatments.
Much of the recent excitement in the area of hepatitis is because of the therapeutic revolution in hepatitis C, and we have a number of new medicines that are have either been approved or and a lot more about to be approved, which really are revolutionizing how we treat hepatitis by shortening the course of treatment to as little as 12 weeks, and in the future maybe even shorter. It's no more injections, these drugs are safe, And they cure almost everybody. It's like 90, 95% of people are cured.
But money is a problem. Patients in the United States have to pay $84,000 for a 12-week course of treatment. Dr. Victor agrees this price is out of reach for most people in the world, especially in developing countries. However, he says he expects the price to come down rapidly. He notes just last month, Egypt negotiated an agreement with the manufacturer to receive the drug at a cost of $900 per patient for the 12-week course of treatment. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights said today that the downing of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17 in rubble-held eastern Ukraine may amount to a war crime. Navi Pillay said in a statement that the horrendous shooting down of the aircraft was a violation of international law. She called for a prompt, thorough, effective, independent, and impartial investigation into the downing of that plane. Pillay said every effort will be made to ensure that anyone committing serious violations of international law in the Ukraine conflict, including war crimes, will be brought to justice, in her words, no matter who they are. Fighting has eased in war-torn Gaza at the start of a Muslim holiday, with world leaders pressuring Israel and Hamas militants to agree to a ceasefire and end their deadly three-week confrontation. The United Nations Security Council adopted a presidential statement supporting an immediate and unconditional humanitarian ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. But Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu rejected the demand, telling UN Chief Ban Ki-moon that it dealt with the needs of a murderous terrorist group that attacks Israeli civilians, end quote, while neglecting the security needs of the Jewish state. And finally, a second oil storage tank is on fire near the Libyan capital, overwhelming firefighters in a situation that one official says is out of control. A spokesman for the National Oil Company told Reuters that a rocket hit the second tank today during clashes between militias fighting for control of the nearby airport. Residents within a 5-kilometer radius near Tripoli International were told to evacuate after shelling triggered the first fire at the depot late yesterday. And that's a look at today's top stories. Hossa, hossa. Well, that's our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song Heart Attack by Radio and Weasel. We've been listening to Radio and Weasel with the song Heart Attack. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. It's been good to have you with us. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.